geometric expansion of Earth. An NOAA scientist named Dr. Athelstan Spillhouse published a paper in 1976 proving the Hopi may have been absolutely right. Spillhouse, who passed away in 1998, was a highly decorated scientist, a genius inventor, and the author of a syndicated comic strip. He developed the bathythermograph, a device for submarine detection that was vital in helping crush Hitler in World War II. Spillhouse also was the inventor and research director of the top-secret Project Mogul weather balloon project, which was officially said in 1994 to have been what really crashed at Roswell. Therefore, Spillhouse's credibility is essential to the alleged UFO cover-up. The story begins with Dr. Hanshu Liu of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, who was the first to discover that when the original supercontinent Pangaea broke up 220 million years ago, it did so along equidistant lines, forming the edges of a pyramid-shaped geometry called a tetrahedron. In this case, you have a pyramid shape with an equilateral triangle on the bottom and three more equilateral triangles making the sides. In a discussion with Spillhouse, who was highly talented at creating unique map projections, they realized that the continents, volcanic ridges, and seismic fault lines then moved into a shape that was a combination of a cube and an octahedron. An octahedron looks like two Egyptian pyramids, base to base, where each face is again an equilateral triangle. From this phase, the Earth again shifted into the exact same pattern that was rediscovered by Sanderson in 1971 and the Russians in 1973. Spillhouse then created a special map projection where he took a single point in the Pacific Ocean and stretched it out into a great circle so that everything on Earth was inside this circle. From that perspective, the geometry became very, very obvious, covering the vast majority of all seismic and volcanic ridges with astonishing precision. I personally contacted Dr. Hanshu Liu in June 2004 to see if this remarkable scientific story was true, and he gave me permission to publish the following statement. Dear Mr. Wilcock, Dr. Athelstan Spillhouse visited me at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in 1976 and asked for reprints of my three papers, Deformation and Instability of Underthrusting Lithospheric Plates, Dynamical Model for the Detachment of Descending Lithosphere, and On the Breakup of Tectonic Plates by Polar Wandering. In 1976, I pointed out such a geometric pattern to Dr. Spillhouse in my office from my work. He was heartened to see that the breakup of the Earth occurred along equidistant points and lines which formed a geometric solid known as a tetrahedron. We had also discussed the possible cube octahedron and icosadodecahedron stages of the lithospheric expansion. Before Dr. Spillhouse left my office, he commented on my work. Now, your ideas about the breakup of the tectonic plates can be stated without mathematics, in a form that people without a scientific education can understand. Your combination of boldness, insight, and courage has enabled you to produce ideas that have transformed our understanding of the dynamics of the Earth. As a mathematical physicist by training, I felt that I was honored. Obviously, geometry now appears to have a much more significant role in the growth and development of the Earth than we thought. The conventionally accepted model of plate tectonics, or what used to be called continental drift, can be traced all the way back to Dr. Alfred Wegener in 1912 and has remained largely unchanged for almost a century. However, both Carl W. Luckert, Professor Emeritus of the University of Southern Minnesota, and James Maxlow have demonstrated clear scientific cases that the Earth has been expanding from within since at least 220 million years ago, when the megacontinent Pangaea first separated. Maxlow simply subtracted each stage of expansion that the seafloor went through worldwide from the overall volume of the Earth's surface. The results are quite striking, as it appears that all the continents fit perfectly together if you shrink the Earth down to 55 to 60% of its current size. Maxlow's work is being taken seriously in certain scientific circles. For example, it was discussed in a 2007 issue of the New Concepts in Global Tectonics newsletter. Maxlow and Luckert are just two of many scientists now promoting such models. Very few scientists have wanted to touch the Earth expansion theory because it suggests that a massive amount of new matter is being generated within the Earth itself. Yet at the same time, most of them have no problem supporting the Big Bang theory, where allegedly all the matter in the universe was created in a single gigantic explosion out of nothing. Maxlow, Luckert, and others have conclusively shown that the plate tectonics model is loaded with problems. If we allow the Earth to be expanding from within by a process of continuous matter creation, we have a much more perfect fit with the real-world data that is available. This, of course, means that matter can be spontaneously generated from the source field. And best of all, we see that the Earth has been expanding through geometric phases along the way. Earth's crystal core. So far, this geometry has appeared as either hidden energy patterns or outlines along the surface of the Earth, which we can measure by the location of seismic fault lines, mountain ranges, and undersea volcanic ridges, all of which could be caused by gravitational stress currents. What about a real, honest-to-God crystal in the Earth that is shaped like this? On the Pittsburgh Supercomputing Center website, a division of Carnegie Mellon, University of Pittsburgh, I found the following revealing quote. "There's a giant crystal buried deep within the Earth, at the very center, more than 3,000 miles down. It may sound like the latest fantasy adventure game or a new Indiana Jones movie, but it happens to be what scientists discovered in 1995 with a sophisticated computer model of Earth's inner core." I was delighted to discover that indeed the Glatzmeyer-Roberts model of the Earth's core had a very clear geometric shape, which some scientists called a hexagonal pattern. However, if you pop in a dodecahedron and then tilt it slightly about 10 degrees, it fits perfectly. No other geometry we have been discussing matches this well. We can also clearly see a spiraling, fluid-like vortex moving through the center of the geometry as well. One study has concluded that some of the Earth's inner core is behaving like a liquid despite its geometric structure, exactly as we might expect given the fluid-like qualities of the source field. The American Geophysical Union has openly stated that the angular tilt of the geometric core is not aligned with the Earth's rotation. As reported in another mainstream study, even more surprisingly, the core is rotating faster than the rest of the Earth. We'll come back to that point later. Scientists even have admitted that current models cannot fully explain this crystal in the center of the Earth. As reported in Physics Today Online, the geometric alignment of the Earth's core may not result from a single force, such as that due to the electromagnetic stresses, but a combination of forces present in the inner core. I struggled for years to understand what could be causing all this geometry to appear so obviously in the actual structure and behavior of the Earth, not to mention the tetrahedral geometry Richard C. Hoagland pointed out on the Sun, sunspot patterns that do not go above 19.5 degrees north or south. Mars, the Olympus Mons shield volcano, three times higher than Mount Everest at 19.5. Venus, two volcanoes at roughly 19.5. Earth, the Hawaiian Islands at 19.5. Jupiter, the Great Red Spot at 19.5. And Neptune, the Great Dark Spot at 19.5. Straight lines aren't supposed to appear in nature, at least not in any conventional mindset. It took quite some time for me to figure out that gravity was actually responsible for creating these cyclones in the atmosphere and/or volcanic upwellings in the mantle. Geometry naturally occurs in a vibrating fluid. I was greatly relieved when I found the work of Dr. Hans Jenny, who found that this geometry appears quite naturally in a fluid by simply vibrating it. Almost immediately, I realized this was the big piece I had been missing, and I was thrilled. In his cymatics research, Dr. Jenny took ordinary water and filled it with tiny free-floating particles known as colloids. These particles will not sink because they are so small. They are in suspension. When Dr. Jenny then vibrated the water at different frequencies, the particles immediately assembled themselves into clear and beautiful three-dimensional geometries. Each pattern stayed nice and still, maintaining the same shape, but there was a great deal of rotational movement within the shape itself. The particles were always on the move. Long, curving loops were also seen emerging from each point of the geometry, showing a constant particle flow from one area to another, and a curving pattern to contrast with the straight lines in the geometry itself. As long as he didn't change the shape of the fluid, the same geometric pattern would again reappear each time he played a certain frequency of sound. Thus, you could have the same fluid with the same particles show a number of different geometric patterns. Every time you played a certain frequency, the same geometry would return, almost as if by magic. Higher frequency sounds created more complex geometry and vice versa. Furthermore, when Dr. Jenny vibrated a larger area of water, instead of just seeing one shape emerge, he got multiple copies of the same pattern, all lined up in nice, neat, organized rows. These patterns seemed to resemble a group of atoms forming a larger structure. Was this the big secret to how all of physical matter really formed? It certainly looked that way. It appears that as the frequency of the energy streaming into the Earth increases, the complexity of the geometry that is structuring the continents, fault lines, and volcanic ridges increases as well, moving from tetrahedron to cube octahedron to our current pattern. By 1996, I had already realized that geometry must be the big secret to understanding energy, matter, the mechanisms responsible for biological life, and even consciousness, although I didn't find the proof in Jenny's work until later on. If we want to find out exactly what coherence looks like in a fluid, we look no further than these five basic Platonic solids: the tetrahedron, cube, octahedron, icosahedron, and dodecahedron. Mathematicians already know these shapes have more symmetry, as in more coherence, than any others. Simply put, each of them will fit perfectly in a sphere, and each point is equidistant from its neighbors. Each side of the geometry has the same shape, and every internal angle will also be the same. Quantum geometry, the big secret. Physicists were always looking for the missing link that could unify the very large with the very small. Now that there were clear and obvious geometric patterns in the Earth, it seemed very likely that if we are truly dealing with a unified field model, the patterns we see on a larger scale would also appear in quantum mechanics. Atoms, rather than being a bunch of seemingly solid particles whirling around a nucleus, could now be reimagined as geometric patterns of flow within the fluid-like energy of the source field. When you increase the frequency of vibration, the geometry becomes more complex. Once we understand how this principle really works, it might also lead to the transmutation of elements, such as the classic alchemist's dream of turning lead into gold. Where do we start then? In Larson's model, if we're looking for geometry within the atom, all we have to do is study the nucleus, as he feels the nucleus is the atom. In The Case Against the Nuclear Atom, Larson points out that in fact the size of the nucleus is rather the size of the atom itself. Larson's model did not have geometry in it, but Nehru also admits they haven't worked all the kinks out yet. It is certain that there is a lot more to be done toward enlarging the application of the reciprocal system to the intrinsic structure of the atom. Perhaps it is time to break new ground in the exploration of the mechanics of the time region. Breaking new ground involves some fresh thinking and leaving no stone unturned. The first scientist I found who had a working quantum physics model based entirely on geometry was Rod Johnson, who posted intriguing concepts on Richard C. Hoagland's discussion forum back in 1996. In the ensuing years, I have interviewed him extensively and published the results on my website, Divine Cosmos. And unfortunately, he passed away in 2010. I was stunned at how many mysteries of quantum mechanics he could explain with geometry, including Planck's constant, the fine structure constant, the ratio between the weak force and the strong force, the structure of the photon, and others. Without ever knowing about Larson's model, Johnson independently developed a similar concept. In Johnson's model, there was indeed a parallel reality that is constantly intersecting with our own in every atom at the tiniest level. Every atom had one geometry in our reality and an opposite, inverse geometry in the parallel reality. The two geometries then counter-rotated inside of each other. Each stage of this process carried you through the different elements. Clearly, Johnson had a great model, although he didn't have enough specifics to resolve the entire periodic table yet. But he felt all the answers could be found in James Carter's theory of circlons. Later on, I found Dr. Robert Moon, who could explain everything in the periodic table with geometry. He was one of the key scientists involved in the Manhattan Project, which developed the world's first controlled thermonuclear fusion reaction. He was the second scientist ever to build a cyclotron in the 1930s and significantly improved the first, which had been built by E.O. Lawrence. In the Manhattan Project, Dr. Moon solved critical problems to make the first atomic pile possible and built the first scanning X-ray microscope after the war. From 1974 until his death in 1989, he was a key collaborator with Lyndon H. LaRouche, Jr. A variety of articles on his new quantum physics model can be found at LaRouche's 21st Century Science and Technology website. In 1986, Dr. Moon finally realized that geometry was the key to understanding quantum physics, and it was a geometry in time as well as in space. That means that when you move through space or time, you must move through geometry. You can't just move in a nice, smooth, even curve. You have to pop through one quantity of space or one quantity of time before you can go to the next one. The scientific word for this kind of movement is that it would be quantized. Dr. Moon outlined his concept that space and time are quantized in a lecture from 1987. One interpretation is that we have two kinds of time, and, he laughs, the secret is that we should have quantization of time for this quantum potential to work. In other words, you have both the quantization of space and time. That just struck like a bolt of lightning. Then, the next thing that struck was, well, if space is going to be quantized, it should be quantized with the highest degree of symmetry. And so that immediately said, well, those are the Platonic solids. And, he laughs, so I was pondering over that until the sun came up. It seemed very obvious how these solids should fit.